When she got to each casino, her gambling habits took over almost as soon as she walked in. She would often play for hours at a stretch. She started small at first, using only the casino's money. Then the numbers got larger, and she would replenish her chips with withdrawals from the ATM. It didn't seem to her like there was a problem. Eventually, she was playing $200 to $300 per hand, two hands at a time, sometimes for a dozen hours at a time. One night, she won $60,000. Twice, she walked away up $40,000. One time, she went to Vegas with $100,000 in her bag and came home with nothing. It didn't really change her lifestyle. Her bank account was still so large that she never had to think about money. That's why her parents had left her the inheritance in the first place, so she could enjoy herself. She would try to slow down, but the casino's appeals became more insistent. One host told me that he would get fired if I didn't come in that weekend, she said. They would say, "We sent you to this concert and we gave you this nice room, and you haven't been gambling that much lately." Well, they did do those nice things for me. In 2005, her husband's grandmother died, and the family went back to her old hometown for the funeral. She went to the casino the night before the service to clear her head and get mentally prepared for all the activity the next day. Over a span of 12 hours, she lost $250,000. At the time, it was almost as if the scale of the loss didn't register. When she thought about it afterward, $250,000 gone. It didn't seem real. She had lied to herself about so much already. That her marriage was happy when she and her husband sometimes went days without really speaking. That her friends were close when she knew they appeared for Vegas trips and were gone when it was over. That she was a good mom when she saw her daughters making the same mistake she had made, getting pregnant too early. That her parents would have been pleased to see their money thrown away this way. It felt like there were only two choices: continue lying to herself, or admit that she had dishonored everything her mother and father had worked so hard to earn. $250,000. She didn't tell her husband. "I concentrated on something new whenever that night popped into my mind," she said. Soon, though, the losses were too big to ignore. Some nights after her husband was asleep, Bachman would crawl out of bed, sit at the kitchen table, and scribble out figures, trying to make sense of how much was gone. The depression that had started after her parents' death seemed to be getting deeper. She felt so tired all the time. And Harris kept calling. This desperation starts once you realize how much you've lost. And then you feel like you can't stop, because you've got to win it back, she said. Sometimes I'd start feeling jumpy, like I couldn't think straight, and I'd know that if I pretended I might take another trip soon, it would calm me down. Then they would call, and I'd say yes, because it was so easy to give in. I really believed I might win it back. I'd won before. If you couldn't win, then gambling wouldn't be legal, right? In 2010, a cognitive neuroscientist named Riza Habib asked 22 people to lie inside an MRI and watch a slot machine spin around and around. Half of the participants were pathological gamblers, people who had lied to their families about their gambling, missed work to gamble, or had bounced checks at a casino, while the other half were people who gambled socially but didn't exhibit any problematic behaviors. Everyone was placed on their backs inside a narrow tube and told to watch wheels of lucky sevens, apples, and gold bars spin across a video screen. The slot machine was programmed to deliver three outcomes: a win, a loss, and a near miss, in which the slots almost matched up, but at the last moment, failed to align. None of the participants won or lost any money. All they had to do was watch the screen as the MRI recorded their neurological activity. We were particularly interested in looking at the brain systems involved in habits and addictions, Habib told me. What we found was that, neurologically speaking, pathological gamblers got more excited about winning. When the symbols lined up, even though they didn't actually win any money, the areas in their brains related to emotion and reward were much more active than in non-pathological gamblers. But what was really interesting were the near misses. To pathological gamblers, near misses looked like wins. Their brains reacted almost the same way. But to a non-pathological gambler, a near miss was like a loss. People without a gambling problem were better at recognizing that a near miss means you still lose.